Welcome to episode 233 of The Low Blow. I am Justin Goodrum, joined by Jorge Hernandez. What's up, man?
Not a whole lot. How you doing? Pretty crazy weekend of MMA.
Yeah, man. A lot of people still basking in the glory of UFC 189 and even the Ultimate Fighter card. Not a bad amount of fights there as well. So we're going to break all that down and preview some and recap some local fighters as well. You know, we had Michelle Watterson, Tim Means, and Holly Holm as of the recording of this podcast in action this week. So we'll break that down as well. As always, you can get in touch with the show through social media. We're available on Twitter through @TheLowBlow. We're available on Facebook through Low Blow Podcast. And we're also available always on Stitcher, Spreaker, and on iTunes, as well as Podomatic.com. So, man, I want to get into it right now. And a lot of people are talking about Conor McGregor and Chad Mendes. And we'll get to that in a second. But if you don't mind, I want to talk about Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald. And really, ever since this fight happened, I've been struggling to find the right words to describe what happened at the end of that fight in terms of what happens with Rory McDonald. And am I being too hard, or am I being, you know, out of touch in terms of describing this guy in big fights? And I think what we saw, one, is just, a bloody, violent masterpiece of a fight. I think a technical stand-up war by both guys. I think Rory McDonald only attempted a couple of takedowns in his bout against Robbie Lawler. Lawler victorious 1 minute into round five via a huge punch to Rory McDonald's nose that pretty much ended the bout. And I said, you know, we watched this at a bar, and I said this, you know, Rory McDonald doesn't have the heart to be champion. And please help me, Jorge, and I mean this in all sincerity, to kind of maybe rephrase that in terms, because I'm not trying to say that he doesn't have heart or determination. He fought his heart out in there. I know that's cliche, but it's true. I mean, people, you know, you hear all the cliches. He left it all in the octagon. He gave it everything he had, but he truly did, based on, you look at Rory McDonald's face, both guys, even Robbie Lawler too. Both guys look like they're in a car accident after the fight took place. So if you can just kind of describe, I mean, where does Rory McDonald go from here? Because to me, it's kind of what I saw in the Carlos Condit fight, because Rory McDonald was up in that fight as well. You heard Farhad Farhadi in that fifth round against Robbie Lawler, says, he said to him, you know, one more round and you win. And he couldn't get it done, and same thing with Carlos Condit. So I just want to ask you, is this a sense of, you know, two tough fights, and he just loses it at the last second? Or do you think there's something psychological here that, you know, it could be a Buffalo Bills, for lack of a better comparison, syndrome of, you know, he can't win the big one? I mean, because he's obviously talented enough and has the skills. He's, I think, the more talented fighter than Robbie Lawler. But Robbie Lawler is just, he's a guy, I mean, we say this, another cliche, you're going to have to kill him to beat him. And to me, you take a look at Lawler, you take a look at, you know, at the last Lawler fight. You know, he was winning that. Lawler pulled it out, winning a split decision. And then you take a look at, you know, Carlos Condit. So I ask you, Jorge, can Rory McDonald beat Lawler, Matt Brown, or Carlos Condit if it goes into kind of who has more heart?
It is that deep waters, you know, situation that we kind of run into with him, or that we ran into with at least this last Lawler fight and the Carlos Condit fight. You know, it comes into digging deep, and you know, this fight took a lot out of both guys.
It did.
As far as it might be the psychological thing, or maybe a question of stamina, or just a sense of urgency. You know, because we've all seen, I guess, McDonald's demeanor outside and inside of the cage, where he's, you know, the lion doesn't come out as often. And I mean the finisher, the strong finisher.
Sure.
If out of his 18 wins, only 7 KOs have come out of it. Of course, he has 6 submissions. There's still a pretty good percentage of fights that he's ended. But, you know, when it comes just to, you know, just having that killer instinct in the big fights, you just haven't seen it out of him. And it might be I don't want to say it's an experience thing, because he has 21 fights. The guy's only 25 years old, man. That's what a lot of people forget. So
yeah,
it's really tough. Just, you wonder if it's the coaching, Jay. I mean, is it the coaching? I mean, how many guys has that gym had? I mean, TriStar, correct me if I'm wrong, what other champion have they had besides GSP?
I think he's the only one, okay, to my knowledge.
Okay,
so.
I wasn't just asking to be sarcastic. No. I really don't know.
No.
Me either. So
I think you're right. Yeah.
It might be a coaching thing to where they're not giving their guy the right instructions, meaning are their instructions, do they mold to the fighter? You see what I mean? Just because GSP is just on a different level of anybody in any combat sport history. So that's what it gets me thinking, because you see this and you see that this team isn't at – I mean, they have great talent. Don't get me wrong. But at the highest level, if GSP is their only world champion, then, you know, you kind of got a question then. Don't forget, a lot of the GSP days, or his golden days, we should say – came when he was also affiliated with Jackson's MMA. So is it TriStar or is it the fighter?
I think that's a really awesome point, because George St. Pierre was able to extract all of the talent that he had to offer, and I just feel like Rory McDonald's still kind of fighting at level 7, you know? Like, I don't think what we saw in Octagon is Rory McDonald's best performance.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean, like, I just don't know if he's extracting all of his true ability, because I think he has that in him to be not just, you know, a B-level fighter. I think he has it in him to be, you know, a top elite fighter, pound for pound, top five in the pound for pound discussions. But for some reason, these guys that Robbie Lawler, I think, is a very elite fighter, but in terms of fighting at max capacity, it's just hard for me to believe Robbie Lawler beat him twice.
Right, and I completely agree, just because of the overall skill set and where they, I mean, in our minds, they kind of rank, and at the points of the careers that they're at. You know, Rory might be in his prime, you know, and Lawler, who we thought was on his way out 2-3 years ago, has had this crazy resurgence. And it's just unbelievable, and I think Rory can get back just because of the talent he has. He can potentially make that way back up. He's still young enough. I think Rory, with his skill set, he could be a threat in this division until he's 33 years old. That's 8 years.
Yeah.
That's 8 years, Jay. So potentially down the line, I think he might get another title fight, but it's going to be hard. It's an uphill battle from here just because of who's at the top.
Well, he's a large individual, so, you know, a move up in weight might be in the future. You never know. All right, man. And really, congratulations to Robbie Lawler. A classic fight.
Right.
And really, I don't think he's really gotten his due for that war he put on. It's unfortunate that it kind of reminds me a lot of the light heavyweight division when Chuck Liddell left, where kind of the belt was kind of flip flopping somewhat. And even though there was multiple champions, you never felt there was a real face of that division until John Jones came along.
Right.
So I hope Robbie Lawler gets that credit, because he deserves it. I think he's put on some spectacular fights. Excuse me. Moving on, let's talk about the main event, man. Conor McGregor, Chad Mendes. It's interesting because online, I think the opinions were mostly positive on this fight, but I get the sense, Jorge, from talking to you while we're watching this, that you have a difference of opinion from the entrances in terms of Sinead O'Connor and the lead singer of Stain. All the way to the actual ending of the fight.
Is that who that was? I had no idea who that guy was.
Yeah, me either. I thought he was the lead singer of the Dave Matthews Band. I was totally wrong. Oh, man. Yeah, so I was totally incorrect there. Shows how old I'm getting. But anyway, in terms of the actual match, it seems Chad Mendes had the distinct advantage in terms of multiple takedowns, wearing at least what we thought was at least wearing down Conor McGregor, but it was actually the opposite. Now, the story of the fight was Conor McGregor was wearing down Chad Mendes with body kicks, wearing him down on the ground, sucking all the energy out of Chad Mendes, and that Chad Mendes really only had 2 weeks to train for this fight, which caused Mendes to get tired at the end of round two. And it was bizarre because he saw pretty much all the energy sapped out of Chad Mendes when that round was about to end. So you said, Jorge, something weird was going to happen in this fight, and it kind of appeared to be that way. Do you want to go all the way and kind of get into a conspiracy theory here, or do you think it was the body work of Conor McGregor that caused Chad Mendes to get tired, and that it was really a 2-week training camp that kind of wasn't enough to train for this type of fight.
I mean, do I want to say this fight is rigged or anything like that? No. I mean, I won't go that far. It was just a little strange to see, you know, Chad Mendes. And when you evaluate everything and take it into consideration, I guess it is possible, you know, the guy was just extremely tired. He was working McGregor. He saw his chance to potentially end the fight. And he went for a submission, and he paid for it because both guys stood up after they were on the ground and where he was dominating. Yeah. He was easily winning that fight 2-0.
He was.
But for a guy coming in as a late replacement, I don't buy the UFC's thing that Chad didn't know 2 weeks out that he would be called up. I think Chad had at least maybe 3 weeks, a month. But still,
agreed.
That's not enough time for a – you know, we all know he's still working out and still in gym, training with a lot of these guys, but you're not training at that level – that you would at for a championship caliber fight because you didn't know you had it. So I'm sure he kicked it into gear those last, you know, those 15 days. But, you know, for that high of level, it's usually not enough. We've seen that in the past, but I'm disappointed in Chad Mendes's, I guess, more inability to end that fight just because I picked McGregor. I thought something weird was going to happen. I wasn't sure what, but it was obvious. It was something that wasn't weird, I guess, that ultimately ended the fight, and that was Mendes' cardio. He was gone. He was breathing pretty deeply. His mouth was, or his jaw was a little loose. Obviously, when you tend to, you know, breathe, you know, that deeply, your body is kind of loose, and he got caught, man. But
yeah,
I mean, did Chad Mendes fight a smart fight? I think he did for a round and a half. And
I think so too. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's where it ended. And the punch was a solid freaking punch. Don't get me wrong. The shots that ultimately ended the contest were strong. And I'm not buying the whole, hey, Herb Dean jumped in too early.
He was finished.
Mendes was covering up. That fight was over. Done. That fight was over. So I have 100% no issue with the stoppage.
Agreed. So what do you make of Conor McGregor? Here we go, man. He wins the fight. It's I don't know if you saw some of the video of the Irish fans celebrating.
Right.
You know, we've both been to the MGM. We've both been in fights at the MGM. I've told you my stories of just being scared leaving the Pacquiao fight. I'm not claustrophobic, but I watched the video. The Fight Network's cameraman, his name's Wei Ting. We had his co-host, John Pollock, on the show before. He's a cameraman for the Fight Network, and he took some cell phone video of the Irish fans. You know the Starbucks at the MGM?
Yes.
All these Irish fans just, like, doing these insane chants. I'll send you the video. Like, it's just stupid chants. I don't even know what they're doing. They're tossing up shoes. They're throwing it down. And it's just – they, like, quiet down. And then they just go into these chants for a good, like, 5 minutes. It's insane. I've never seen anything like it in terms of this guy. And it just seems like it's Ricky Hatton on steroids. Like – because I remember Ricky Hatton in his heyday had tons of his fans, you know, like really passionate for him. But it just seems like this is this, you know, somebody went into a lab and just, okay, we're going to take all of the good aspects of Ricky Hatton, but we're going to combine it with Floyd Mayweather, and you get Conor McGregor. it's just unbelievable. So besides the fight itself, we know that he has a wrestling deficiency. His coach said that he couldn't train wrestling at all because of his injured knee. I think he still has problems on the ground. Luke Thomas said himself his guard was non-existent. So clearly, to me, in my opinion, Conor McGregor has a definite weakness on the ground. But standing up, there's been many praises of this guy just being just this genius standing up. And I want to get your opinion on how you think he was on the stand-up. We know about his deficiencies on the ground. That's pretty obvious. But to me, Luke Thomas made a comparison of, you know, he made a kind of comparison of, you know, his stand-up was like almost Shakespearean-like. But I'll put it in a rap context. Do you think his stand-up's like Kendrick Lamar in a lyrical context? Or do you think it's more on the Drake level? if we're going hip-hop, because you brought it up before the show started. So I thought you were
I kind of like that. I'd say I don't want to say Kendrick Lamar because to me that's almost impeccable. That's to me, Kendrick Lamar is Carlos Condit type of striking, and I don't think Conor McGregor's at that level just yet. But it was. I mean, he did a hell of a job. That's his forte, the stand-up game, man. he was precise. His precision was on point that night, and whenever he was on the ground, of course, as you mentioned, he had a deficiency, and it was obvious that's where he was losing the battle. He got the battle back to the feet, back standing up, and that's where he knew he had his shot, and he ended it. So, I mean, you got to give him credit for that, but, I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You said borderline, like a step below.
Okay.
Which was surprising to me. Just like because Luke Thomas is very knowledgeable. If you watch his morning chats,
right.
He
no,
went
I
into
agree.
Extreme detail in terms of Conor McGregor's movement and the different variety of strikes. So since you know you have extensive knowledge with boxing and just stand up parts of the wall, I just want to get your thoughts. If people are tripping out, or do you think it's really legitimate?
It really was. I'm trying to think of the stand up. It was just the classic kind of movement from the hip. I mean, maybe Gary Russell. I mean, except with the hand speed, just the ability to move from the hips and be able to explode. But you're right. I mean, but again, look who he was fighting. He wasn't fighting a well-known boxer, not boxer to the regard of an actual professional boxer, but someone in MMA who's known for his boxing. He fought a wrestler, so anytime. You could also say the opposite of Mendes. His wrestling was Shakespearean, all for, 10 seconds of it.
Sure.
So
sure.
It all depends on the matchup. And if you're looking based off of who he fought compared to them, yeah, then I would call it Shakespearean because Mendes I never thought was a great technical boxer. And McGregor is a great technical striker. I think we all know that. I don't know if we call him – I guess you can call him great. If you compare him to a lot of people in that weight class, yeah, he is a great technical striker.
So I guess I'm sorry. I was watching this face-off between Tony Ferguson and Josh Thompson. I almost got into it. But I guess I'm trying to kind of find the words to kind of put in the context where we go from here because the UFC threw a lot of bells and whistles. We're at a bar, so we couldn't really hear too much of the audio, but it has seemed we got a new intro, a new Face the Pain dubstep remix. We got new graphics. It just seemed like the UFC was finally, from my presentation standpoint, coming into its own. And I know you didn't like the entrances in terms of the different musical acts for both main event fighters, but what were your opinions of just the presentation standpoint? Were you paying attention to that? I know it's kind of hard in a bar, again. And I watched it on TV by itself, but I was just really impressed. It looked slick. For the first time, I felt UFC had a true identity in terms of what you're seeing, on the screen compared to, Pride. Even, I mean, we're talking 15 years ago. I had put Pride's production values over the UFC's prior to UFC 189, but UFC 189 was the first time I felt from the holographic projections on the Octagon to just the graphics packages, I just felt the UFC, for the first time, had its own identity in terms of what the viewer was watching at home.
I agree with you, and it's something that it needed. It needed something different, and, with the combination of McGregor, he's something different. You rarely see McGregor, not necessarily the type of fighter he is, but the type of individual or persona he gives out. That's a one-in-a-generation type of fighter, Jay.
Sure.
I mean, let's think back at least the last 20 years. Maybe not once in a generation, maybe a couple of times a generation. Because if you think back to combat sports, Prince Nassim Hamed, Mayweather, to some regard, Broner. But, I mean,
sure.
We all know he reached the level to, his championships were won against pretty easy competition. And Conor McGregor, I think it would be those three, that type of bravado, that type of cockiness, and, I'd say arrogance for all of them. And for them to be able to cash that in the ring or octagon, it's rare to see. So I like the fact that UFC was trying something different. I like that they're opening their minds. It kind of pisses me off, however, that they're okay with Sinead O'Connor and then whoever the hell the other guy was to do something like that. But out of all the UFC events I've ever been to, they've never done the national anthem. So to me, that's – I guess maybe because the strong, boxing, following or the fact that I follow boxing as much as I have over the last, 20-plus years, it's – I guess that's part of the hype also. So, you know, if they have these opening acts, that further adds to the hype, I feel, and just the anticipation. It's good television value, despite the fact they had two, you know, artists who I really don't know a whole lot of as far as what they've done musically.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jose Aldo, he's supposed to get Rihanna. They're working on it. They're supposed to be running this town, and he got hurt, so she wasn't running anything. But I think you make a good point about the national anthems, because prior to the national anthems, this played over the loudspeaker before the main event. And I think, you know, look at all the stalling UFC does, all the movie promos for a pay-per-view. I mean, you pay money not to watch fighting, not ads. And ads for movies, for stuff you don't care about. And so you take the ads away, and you add the national anthems, you have the same time in terms of timing. So, real quickly, because we could spend hours talking about this card, but what were your thoughts on the undercard? Thomas Almeida with his flying knee, Jeremy Stephens with another flying knee, Gunnar Nelson gets the rear naked choke. Before we talk about Tim Means, I just want to get your thoughts on the rest of the
undercard. I thought it was a great card. I mean, overall, yeah. If it's not a solid A, it's an A+. Just based off of the submissions and knockout. I mean, I don't know if you realize this, Jay, but none of the fights in the main card actually went to a decision. They all ended early, especially that Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald. They were in the last round, so
yeah.
Every single one of those cards. But the Thomas Almeida flying knee was the thing of beauty. That the next set of UFC prepackaged highlights to hype up the show, I think that highlight is definitely going to be in it.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Okay, man, so I know you enjoyed the event. Yeah, I mean, you were very entertained by it, but I guess I got the sense you were pretty bummed out from what we saw from Tim Means and Matt Brown. Matt Brown gets the victory, round one, 444, guillotine choke. Tim Means, and it's back and forth. There was an eye poke. I believe, who was it? Was it Tim Means who poked Matt Brown?
The
other way around.
Yeah, the other way around,
okay. So after the eye poke, I think you saw kind of Matt Brown take a little bit more control. Tim Means landed a couple of good shots, but yet Matt Brown, I think, landed a hard elbow, and that kind of sealed the deal. Now we see it's based on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson and Jorge Masvidal from the Ultimate Fighter finale. Both of those guys seem to be in a mix to fight Matt Brown. But from a Tim Means perspective, I mean, where does this put him? Because, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, if you're not a Tim Means fan or you don't see this guy fight, okay, this guy can't hack it against elite competition. He needs to fight scrubs again. But I think he was back and forth against a guy who's a known warrior. It's not like the fight sucked. He went out on a shield. I mean, am I being kind of the hometown cheerleader here and saying that this won't hurt Tim Means as much? Or do you think this is kind of going to take a blow to his career?
It really depends on what happens in the next fight. You know, a lot of us, we said the same thing about Rustam Khabibov when he fought Benson Henderson here in Albuquerque, if you remember. They were the main event here. Rustam gave him hell in, I believe, what was it, two or three rounds that they kind of went at it. And I think Henderson ultimately did take it toward the end there. But, I mean, for Rustam, I think he went on to lose his next fight.
Yeah.
When everyone expected him, I think he was ranked 14th or 15th when him and Henderson was ranked number two. And a lot of people thought, well, why is he fighting someone who's ranked – why is Henderson fighting someone who's ranked 14th or 15th or whatever it may have been? But, you know, after losing to Benson Henderson, Rustam went on and lost to Adriano Martins.
Yeah.
So it really, really depends on what happens to Tim Means after this. If he were to win his next two fights and, you know, come back – around, and then I don't think it hurts him. But as just at face value right now, fighting a guy who was number five and very well known in the division, I don't think it hurts him or devastates him. I mean, the only reason I think, Jay, I can't remember how old Tim is. If I had to guess, I'd say he was maybe 31, 32. So,
oh wow, yeah.
I think it really depends. And he didn't look bad in that fight.
He did. He didn't look at all.
Very good to me. He was winning that round as far as it was going, but we knew one way or the other something was going to break. And yeah, he's 31. He doesn't turn 32 into February. So,
yeah.
Based off the way he fights, that essentially was just a contest to where you know there was going to be a slugfest. And there's not that many guys that'll, you know, pull him into a slugfest, you know, for that to happen. And for Tim Means, his only four of his losses have been by stoppage, only one TKO and then three submissions. So he's able to grind out these fights and be able to take him to a decision. So as long as he's not fighting other guys who are, you know, knockout artists or just these guys who are super grimy, then I think Tim Means has a very good chance of making a way back up the division.
I mean, the only bad loss in the UFC was against Neil Magny. I mean, that's a bad loss. He lost unanimous decision. But other than that, I mean, the guys he's lost to have been fairly talented. Oh, he lost to Danny Castillo, too.
Right, right. And that was, yeah, you know, that was a kind of a bad loss.
That was, yeah. I mean, you know, look at Matt Brown, his opponent. You know, he was written off. People said Matt Brown was just, you know, this journeyman fighter, you know, fly by night. And then all of a sudden he goes on his massive winning streak. I mean, no one thought Matt Brown was going to be an elite contender in the UFC. But yet, I mean, you take a look. He lost. Look at this. Look at Matt Brown. He lost three fights in a row in 2010. Ricardo Almeida, Chris Lytle, and Brian Foster. He lost three in a row. But he got finished. He got finished. And he also lost to Seth Brzezinski. He got finished there, too. So to say that, you know, Tim Means is done beating elite fighters, kind of ridiculous. When his opponent, I mean, he got finished tons of times, and he survived, and he's still in that elite class of fighters. So I think Tim Means has nothing to be ashamed of. And really, the ball's in his court. Does he have the mental capacity to kind of stick with it? I do want to talk about the Ultimate Fighter finale a little bit. We don't have to talk about the Ultimate Fighter itself. I don't even care about Conor McGregor and Uriah Faber. People online were freaking out. It's irrelevant to me. As long as McGregor gets to train properly for his fight against Jose Aldo, I can care less. Do you have any thoughts on the next Ultimate Fighter in terms of the coaches or no?
No. I mean, as long as they're not fighting each other. They're not fighting
each
other, right? I mean, I don't know.
And people were upset. Change. Yeah, they're not fighting each other. People were, like, upset about that. I was like, good, they're not. Whoops he do? Like, they're going to talk trash, and it'll at least be entertaining from a coach's perspective. I didn't get the hostility just from the fact, I mean, besides the fact that the show itself is irrelevant. But, you know, they'll talk trash, and it'll be entertaining for an episode or two. I don't know. I do want to talk about Michelle Waterson's performance on the Ultimate Fighter card. She was victorious, very impressive against a tough opponent, somebody who's, you know, a veteran of the game itself. Waterson was in a little bit of trouble in the first round, but because of her strong jiu-jitsu, got out of it. When I talked to you in the bar, you pretty much said that Angela Magana pretty much posed a little bit of no threat to her. And we saw Waterson really show a lot of veteran poise in the octagon, despite the fact this is her first time stepping inside there. Really, you know, some pressure there because a lot of people, you know, knew who she was being from Invicta and being a champion there. So considering Michelle Waterson gets the victory and the finish, I mean, right now this division is kind of up in the air. We discussed the strawweights before, but, you know, she has a lot of the positive attributes like Paige VanZant. She's already in the Samsung commercial. It's no secret. She's very attractive. She's very well-spoken. She has a lot of attributes that the UFC and Reebok are going to like, and especially in a division where it's kind of, you know, the elite fighters have not really straightened itself out because the division hasn't been around for a year yet. Could we see Michelle Waterson kind of leapfrog some people compared to Holly Holm, who's fighting tomorrow as of recording this podcast on Wednesday night, where Holly gets to kind of mature and grow in that division? Michelle Waterson might be rushed to the top quicker than what she expected.
I think so, because it's a division where you don't have that many names. There's no one even close to a Ronda Rousey name in that division.
No.
It's the division that needs some sort of spark, I guess we can call it. So I do see that happening, and just because of that, and just because of, you know, what you kind of brought on is, you know, she's a very good-looking woman, very good, and I'm talking about Waterson, and very
sure,
well-mannered, very a family person. You know, it's just everything positive that you want, plus she can kick some ass.
Yeah.
So that's not bad at all, but for us to, you know, use Angela Magana as a measuring stick, no disrespect to her, but
yeah.
Michelle Waterson's going to have to be a lot tougher competition for me to consider her a threat in that division. I mean, for goodness sake, she was fighting at 105 and was I don't want to say was making that weight easy, but didn't really seem to struggle. So 115 is a lot of weight, Jay. I mean, you got 10 pounds for her. She can't lose that much. But think about it this way. The last fight that she fought with Invicta, she lost the championship against a girl who came down from 115. So that will always stick in my mind as far as that. So, you know, sure. we'll definitely have to see. And I haven't looked at the rankings at 115. I'm going to look at it now. Michelle Waterson jumped to number 12. She is 12th in the women's strawweight rankings.
Well, come on, man. I mean, you take a look at the UFC, and they ranked Conor McGregor number one in the featherweight division.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous, considering Jose Aldo has been the only champion. So I think it's interesting to see where we go from here. Just a couple of more things before we get to Holly. Your thoughts on just the main event itself. Stephen Wonderboy Thompson looking spectacular on this knockout against Jake Ellenberger. Two spinning wheel kicks. Quickly, your thoughts on that and where you see Wonderboy Thompson.
That was pretty.
It's definitely impressive.
That was pretty. That sent me, you know, I don't normally go and one mixtape yelling, but I definitely did there. It was just unbelievable. I wanted to run around the house when I saw that. It was so pretty. And, I mean, for you to have a technical striker that way and be able to end the fight so exciting, it's – you remember, we saw a lot of that in the Machida era, right?
Yeah.
And for Wonderboy, for some reason to me, he has a little more flair than Machida does, or Machida did, I should say. So if he's able to keep this going, and the thing about that makes him excitement is he's susceptible to being knocked out. He almost got dropped in that fight.
He did, yeah. He's a lot more aggressive and takes more chances.
Right, than the traditional mixed martial artist. And I'm saying traditional mixed martial artist at its purest form.
Yep, I agree. Let's talk about Holly, man. She is, again, same thing with Michelle Waterson, kind of came out of nowhere. Fighting Marion Monroe, really a fighter that not a lot of people have seen. Looking at her fight record here, she's won 3 in a row so far. She's 4-1. She's won 2 fights in the UFC. You know, she won a fight against Jessica Andrade. She was a pretty decent opponent. In terms of Holly Holm's development, what do you want to see here? Do you want to see Holly Holm on her back and trying in her guard, or do you want to see her just kind of progress naturally?
I want to see her just knock someone the hell out, Jay.
Yeah.
we didn't see that Holly in boxing. That's what people don't realize, that, you know, people were upset. It's like, oh, this is what we've been waiting for. It's like, that's who Holly is.
It's true.
She's the relaxed technical fighter. I'm only going to, you know, force action when I can have advantage of it.
Is she like Rory McDonald?
You know what? That's a great freaking point. I think so. I think it might be. And the scary thing is, you know, Rory, I think so, man. That's a very good comparison.
I was going to say
that the killer instinct in them, I guess it does exist if it's there technically, but they don't search for the kill, if that makes any sense.
It does.
They wait for it to come as opposed – they materialize it, they build up to it, as opposed to just dropping that one heavy hit. And I guess that's the thing with a lot of technical fighters. And for Holly, you know, it might be who she is, but with what we saw in today's weigh-in, I have never seen that from Holly Holm. That prolonged stare, just you know, this is complete 180 from how timid she was walking to the ring the last time she came about at UFC. What was it, UFC 182, 180?
I
can't remember.
Something like that.
But, yeah. You know, here she is coming in jittery, and at today's weigh-in, she's like, all right, every single jitter was obviously coming out of Holly Holm, and we saw a different Holly today at that weigh-in scale. And it to me, it was kind of scary because we've never seen that before. So I'm picking Holly via stoppage in the first round tomorrow. I don't know how you pick against that look she had in her face and in her eyes.
Yeah, very intense. We'll see if that transfers into the octagon. Main event, Todd Duffy, Frank Mir. Again, the heavyweight division's experiencing a resurgence. Certainly, Todd Duffy gets a win here. This will push him into bigger fights. Do you have a prediction for that fight at all? Do you care or not?
I don't know if I care that much.
Okay. And before we go, I want to address this rumor about Theodore coming back. Apparently, he's coming out of retirement.
Who did you say? Did you say Theodore or Fedor?
Fedor. Theodore. That's what they call him. Sorry. But I guess my question is, I mean,
yeah, I know what you mean.
Theodore, I didn't even hear of this.
We got the Americanized, I guess, pronunciation of it. Yeah.
I'm just shocked because I didn't even know about this till yesterday, and then I get the alert today that he's coming out of retirement. So, I mean, is he still a player? I mean, this division's pretty old here in the UFC, and we saw the debacle that happened, you know, before with the UFC trying to sign, you know, Fedor, whatever you want to call him, on the private island. I mean, we have to go through this garbage all over again. I mean, there's a lot of MMA media just worship the ground this guy walks on, and I thought these days were over.
Well, what is he coming out of retirement to? I don't know if I've seen anything specific, if he's thinking of going to the UFC or a Bellator.
I have no idea.
If he's going to Bellator, then it's going to be exciting, and he'll probably kick, you know, most of the guys' butts. But he's what? He's got to be pushing 40,
he's
right?
38. He's 38? He's 38, yeah.
And as talented as he was, Jay, you know, a lot of people say he didn't fight, you know, I mean, I don't care what people say. He beat some legends.
Oh, in pride, absolutely.
Yeah, when he's fought, the greatest. At 38, he hasn't fought in quite a while. He didn't look great, and you know, when he lost to a couple of those younger guys, and man,
yeah,
I want to see it just because I was a huge fan. But realistically, if we're measuring him, if he's going to the UFC, Jay, I don't see how he can do it. It's going to be very difficult.
If you look at Mark Hunt and Fabricio Verdum and a lesser extent Mirko Krokop, if those guys can win fights in the UFC, so can Fedor Emelianenko. So all bets are off if he gets there and all hell's going to break loose. I can't wait to see it. I think his chances are as good as anybody's because if this was the same level of talent in the featherweight division, a bunch of young lions just all going at each other, I would say no way the sport's passing by. But you got a bunch of, no disrespect, borderline senior citizens in there. I mean, no one's really a spring chicken. Even Todd Duffy's been around the block. So, I mean, to say, you know, if he's truly serious that Fedor Emelianenko, you know, wins a couple of fights here, he can be back in it. I mean, who knows? All bets are off.
Yeah, dude, you're right. If he wins even maybe one or two fights, he'll move up the ranking just because, one, you got a lot of, I guess, fanboy, if you borrow a phrase here, journalist voting that'll probably vote him all the way to the top. But
for sure.
I don't know. It's just very interesting to see where he's actually going to fight. Then I guess I'll kind of see this a little more realistic.
Well, man, that's going to wrap up our show. I hope everybody enjoyed UFC 189's spectacular card. Again, you can always get in touch with the show through YouTube, Twitter, and on iTunes as well. A big thanks to MyMMAnews.com and SouthwestFight.com for hosting our content. Appreciate them. So for Jorge Hernandez, I am Justin Goodrum. You've been listening to episode 233 of The Low Blow. Enjoy the fights. You have fights Saturday. It's fights this weekend. Michael Bisping's in action. Try to do something else besides watching fights. Go out and walk in a park somehow. See you later.